So we are holding on Ayin Hey Omud Beis, a bit past the middle of the where the line begins, Nami. 15 lines from the bottom. In the Mishnah, we said that two cases. You have a case where mumim were discovered on a woman while she's still living at home, so during the Erusin, but before the Nisuin. And the Mishnah said, if the father wants his daughter to be able to collect a ksuba, or if the daughter herself is a ktana, then the father is going to be collecting the ksuba herself, then the father is going to be collecting the ksuba on her behalf himself. Anyway, in order to do that, he would have to bring proof that the mumim only came into existence after the Erusin. In other words, that at the time of the Erusin, she was free of mumim, and now we would say, therefore, it's the husband's tough luck that they developed, mistachfa sadeh. On the other hand, if the mumim were discovered only after she entered the husband's reshus, meaning after the marriage, then it would be the other way around. If the husband wants to say that it was a mekach tos, and that he shouldn't have to pay hooks, or they shouldn't have to pay hooks over, then he would have to bring proof that these mumim existed even before the Erusin. That was according to the mayor, and then the Chachamim discussed the matter of the moment of a gullery versus moment of a seser, where certain kinds of moment he could have found out, and certain kinds of moment he's able to find out before the marriage because they can be because they're visible, or because there's a bathhouse in town and he can ask his female relatives, etc. So the Gemara's so we were discussing the first half of the Mishnah according to the mayor. Now, we had, in the first parak, we had a machlokas from Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua in several cases where there's an argument where the husband finds that the wife is not a besula, and he's claiming, therefore, that it was a mekach tos, or that, so I shouldn't have to pay a ksuba at all, or I should have to pay a ksuba of only 100 zuz rather than 200. And we had, in a number of such cases, Rabbi Gamliel says that we believe her. For example, she says that it was because of an onus, because I was raped after the Erusin, so therefore it's in Sachta Sadehu. Or she says, Mukas Eitz, I was injured by a piece of wood, and I never actually had relations with anybody. And in each case, the husband is making a counterclaim. So Rabbi Gamliel says we believe her, and Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Eliezer say we believe her. Rabbi Yeshua says we don't, she needs to bring proof. So now, how does that square with our Mishnah? So in our Mishnah, in the first half of the Mishnah, it sounds like the husband, and it sounds like the father has to bring the proof. And if not, if he can't bring proof, then by default, we believe the husband, that the mum existed before the Erusin, and so it was a mekach tos, rather than saying that maybe it developed after the Erusin while she's still living at home. In the Sefer, we're saying that the husband has to bring a proof, implying that if he can't, then we assume that it happened after the Erusin, unless the husband brings proof that it happened before the Erusin. So why is that? Are we going according to Rabbi Gamliel or according to Rabbi Yeshua? So Rabbi Lazar, in fact, had said that the two parts in the Mishnah must be according to two different tenor. However, Rava was saying that not necessarily, you could say we have a matter of kan nimtzu of kan hoyu, wherever we found the mumim is where we assume that where we found the mum is where we assume that it took place. So in the Reisha, since we found the mum when she was living at home, then it means, in other words, the father's chazaka, that so like this, there is a chazaka that originally she was born without mumim, but that chazaka is now ruined because they may have been there before the Erusin. And then in the Sefer, the same thing. Since they were only discovered once she moved into her husband's house, then therefore we would also say, kan nimtzu, kan hoyu, the likelihood is we would have to assume that they developed only in this reshus. So that's going to lead us into a long discussion about this matter in halacha of this concept of kan nimtzu, kan hoyu. Which there's a lot of opinions among the Rishonim and Achronim about different angles of it. Among other things, and we're going to go through some of them in the sugya. One of the most basic questions is, what is this exactly? Is this a counter chazaka, or does this just ruin the original chazaka? Rashi's lashon seems to say that it just ruins the chazaka. It's not a chazaka of its own, but it's rather something that ruins the existing chazaka, that we would have said cheskas aguf, that she has a chazaka that she was born without mumim. But the other possibility is maybe we're talking about a new chazaka that comes into effect now. So Omer Abaya, so Esve Abaya. So Abaya says to Rava, so you're telling me it's a matter of kan nimtzu of kan hoy, but let's look at the second part of the Mishnah again. We said nichnas al rishus habaal. We said once she's gone into the husband's rishus, then if he discovers the mumim, habaal tzarich lahavi raya sha'ad shalat yisaris hayuva mumineru, the husband has to bring proof that before the erusin these mumim already existed, v'hoya mekhe mekach tos, and therefore that it was a mekach tos, that it was a mistaken, and it was a mistaken thing, and he wouldn't have married her, he wouldn't have been Makadish her in the first place if he had known she had mumim, and therefore that he wants to be Mavatul the Kedushin, and say no get to no ksuba. Now the implication is, says Abaya, ad shalitis aris ein, so you're saying that he has to bring proof that it happened before the Erusin, mishat is aris loy. It sounds like if the husband brought proof that the mumim were known to be on her after the Erusin, even though she's living at home, then that would be good enough. Now, by your logic, Rava, since the mumim, if the husband brings proof that the mumim were found when she was living with her father, then that means by the logic of kan nimtzu kan hoyu, means they were there all along. They developed at some earlier point when she was living in the father's house. Well, in that case, then that might equally well have been before the Erusin. So wouldn't we have to say that no, the we can't reconcile the Reisha and the Sefer of the Mishnah necessarily? They must be according to different Tanoim. Because otherwise, why is the second part of the Mishnah saying that he has to bring proof that they were ad shalotis aris when on the logic of kan nimtza kan hoya, all he needs to do is bring proof that they were known while she was living at home, and kan nimtza kan hoya will tell us then that chazaka or breaking the chazaka or whatever will tell us that in fact they existed even before the erusin, also while she was living at home. Amalei, so Rava answers him, the reason why it wouldn't be good if he brings proof that the mumim existed after the Erusin, Mishum de Ikala Mema, because against that kan nimtza kan hoya, you have a different chazaka ain't on him shoysa bakois, elayim kain birdkoi. The metaphor is a man doesn't drink from a cup unless he checks it first. The nimshal being over here, that you have now, the fact is he's already done nisuin with her, and we can assume that he wouldn't have done nisuin with her unless he checked out thoroughly and found out that she didn't either she didn't have mumim, or therefore that if she has mumim, then we have to assume he would have accepted it, otherwise he wouldn't have gone through with the chuppah at all. So in other words, we do say kan nimtza kan hoya, but what we also say is, on the other hand, against that, we have a chazaka. Number one, we have cheskas aguf, that she was born after all without mumim. And then we have a chazaka that she was born without mumim, and that they developed only later. So we would rather try to keep that chazaka going as long as possible. Now, you can say that chazaka has been damaged by the fact that now the fact is we found mumim, but you also have the chazaka in her favor of einonim shoyse b'kois, elim ken bodkoi. So therefore, by the time now we're after the chuppah in the sefer of the Mishnah, then the assumption is he must have reconciled himself to those mumim. So now, if he wants to claim later that he did not, then he would have to be the one to bring the proof that these mumim in fact existed before the Erusin. So in effect, you have an extra chazaka that helps her out. But if the Gemara asks, So based on that chazaka, the logic is that the likelihood is that he did in fact see these mumim and he accepted them and he's willing to live with them. So now he can't change his mind later. Well, the question is, yehochi ad shelo desaris nami. Nu, then what does it help if he brings a proof that the mumim existed before the erusin? Once we say chazaka in adam shoyse b'kois, then we would say any mumim that are found after the chuppah don't count. It wouldn't matter whether he brings proof that they were before the Erusin or what have you. So why is the Mishnah implying that if he brings proof that the mumim were before the Erusin, he can in fact break the Kedushin and say nothing happened over here. Based on that, we should say he has a chazaka that he accepted the mumim. Ella, Mishnah is arsa. So rather, the reason must be that why, if he brings proof that the mumim happened only after erusin. We have to say the reason why it helps her and to say that she does get her ksuba after all is because you have two chazakas. Number one, hamid aguf al cheskasa, because again she has a cheskas aguf. She was born without mumim. The mumim developed sometime only later in life. We don't know when. So therefore, we have every reason to say that they developed only after the erusin, or she can claim that at least. And you will have against that the chazaka that Ella, no, the reason why if the mumim were discovered and after the chuppah, but we have proof that they were before the erusin, then the husband can say in that case it was mekaftos. Why? Aminan chazaka eidonim ifayis v'mumim. The reason must be because on the other hand, against all of that, we have a chazaka that a person is not usually going to reconcile himself to mumim. It could happen, of course, but on the other hand, the chazaka is that a man is going to object to these mumim, and once he finds out about them, and is going to want to break the kedushin because of that. So hochanam chazaka einad mafayis mumim. So then again, what's the difference whether we prove that they were there? What's the difference between whether we prove that they were there before the erusin, even if all he can prove is that they were there at the time of the after the erusin? Fine, but we would still say by Rava's logic, kan nimsa kan hoya. So therefore, so once we know that they existed in the father's house, then we have every reason to say that they were there even before the erusin. You're saying against that you have the chazaka of einan mshoyis b'koish. Yeah, but opposing that chazaka, you have the chazaka einan mfayis b'mumin. So how do you, so like one of those chazakas kind of cancels each other out. The one chazaka is saying that once he does chuppah, we assume that any mumim he knows about, he's reconciled to. But on the other hand, we have an equally valid chazaka that say that a man is not reconciled to mumim. So those two kind of cancel each other out. Ella, so no, what we have to say is the distinction would be as follows. Mishnas Arisa, the reason why if the mumim developed after the erusin, or if we have proof only that they were there after the erusin, but no proof that they were there before that, Mishum de'ika tauti chazaka. The reason is not just we have the chazaka of einan mshoyis v'kos. We also have to consider the chazaka hamid aguf al cheskasa. She has a chazaka of her body. At one point in her life, she was free of mumim, or of this particular mumim anyway. Now she has it, so it developed at some point. We don't know when that some point is. Therefore that strengthens her case to say that the mum developed only after the erusin, and that's the husband's tough luck because at that point the erusin is already valid and he has to go through with it. And the chazaka in anam shoyis v'kos elim kein boit. Okay, you also have the chazaka that he's not going to drink from a cup, meaning he's not going to marry her unless he checks it out. So therefore, v'hai rov nifayisu, and that therefore he saw the mum and was willing to live with it. So therefore, she has two chazakas in her favor. So it's true. One of those chazakas, the cheskas aguf, has been weakened by the fact that now we find the mum. But on the other hand, we still have the other chazaka to go along with it. So we have like one and a half chazakas, so to speak. My amet chazaka einan mefayis b'mumin. So you're going to say against that, what? You have the chazaka that a husband is not going to be appeased, is not going to be willing to accept mumin. Fine, that's true. That is a valid chazaka. Still have a chodeh b'mokim tarti. All you have is one chazaka against two. Now, Rashi explains, now why don't you have also the chazaka of hamid mumin achaskase? The fact is the husband is muchzik in the money. We're talking about the money of the ksuba. He has a chazaka of it. Why don't we say that's a chazaka as well? Rashi says that, listen, when you have a chazaka of the guf, then a chazaka of mama doesn't really count against it. So therefore, we don't say one chazaka doesn't help him when there are two chazakas against it. The cheskas aguf, which fine, the cheskas aguf has been weakened, but it still exists to a certain extent, and therefore the cheskas aguf would tell us, yes, now we know she has a mum, but nevertheless we should assume that it happened as late as possible. And the chazaka that he wouldn't have gone through with the chuppah, which is the sefer of the Mishnah after all, because we're talking about it was discovered while she's living with her husband, so he wouldn't have done that unless he was willing to accept the mum. Fine, against that we have a chazaka that a man doesn't accept mumim. But that's one against two. And so again, Rashi says we don't count the Cheskas Mammon because that doesn't count anything against the Cheskas Aguf. Tosfos discusses that. Tosfos discusses that in some detail. One thing Tosfos points out is that maybe the Cheskas Mammon would help one of his chazakas, but it's not going to help. It's not going to help both of them together. Also, Tosfos points out an interesting point that with the woman's taina, all she needs is one of her tainas to be correct. All she needs is one of her chazakas to help her. Either cheskas aguf, which tells us that at the time of the erusin she still had the previous chazaka of not having a mum, or the chazaka of einanim shoseh b'kos, namely that she may have had the mum before, but the husband was willing to accept it. So as long as either one of those chazakas works out, then we're good. On the other hand, the husband is going to need both. Is going to need both of his chazakas. The husband is going to need to break both of those chazakas. After all, if we use the cheskas, if in fact because of the cheskas aguf, we have to assume that the mum developed only later, then it means it's his tough luck. And if the chazaka of einanim shoseh b'kos is accepted, then it means that again he has no claim because it means he was willing to accept it. So even though he has a chazaka, and maybe even he has two chazakas, because he has the chazaka that a man doesn't accept mumim, and maybe also the cheskas mumim, those are both weaker chazakas in the sense that he has to have all of those chazakas be valid in order for his claim to be accepted. Within this, by the way, there is a machlokas rishonim. What exactly is the nature of the husband's claim over here anyway? She's claiming bari, of course. She's claiming, I'm certain that I had this mum only at such and such a point. What is the husband counterclaiming? Is he also claiming bari? I am certain that you had this mum before we ever had the erusin, and therefore that was a mekach tos, and I'm going to go bring Adim for it. And again, if he brings Adim is one thing, but otherwise he may not have a case. Or is the husband claiming only Shema? He's saying, I'm not certain. Maybe in fact it was different. Now in the Machlokas of Rabbi Eliezer and in the Machlokas of Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua at the beginning of our Masechta, we also discussed the point, are they talking about when there are body versus body claims or is it body versus Shema? When, for example, so the husband finds her not a basula, which is also a matter of that the chazakah has been broken. She was born as a basula after all. And she says, for example, that she says that there was an onus after the erusin and therefore nistachva sadehu. And he says, no, it was before the erusin, and we had the machlokas over there. So the Gemara also discusses over there whether Rav Gamliel is whether Rav Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua are arguing specifically in the case of bari v'shema, or are they even arguing when it's bari or bari, even when the husband is saying, I have a claim with certainty, and I just haven't found proof for it yet, or does it maybe apply only when the husband, maybe, or do we say, would Rabbi Yeshua say that we don't believe, would rather Rav Gamliel say that we don't believe him only when he's making the Tainas Shema against her Tainas Bari. That affects our Gemara over here as well, because according to Rashi, what Rava is trying to say, Rava's whole answer that we're in the middle of discussing over here is specifically according to Rav Gamliel. on the other hand, there are Rishonim who learn that we can try to make it work according to Rabbi Yeshua as well. Now, the halacha is like Rav Gamliel in those dinim in the first perek. Therefore, it actually says we would rather try to make our Mishnah work all like Rav Gamliel rather than having to say, as we said earlier in the sugya, that half of it is according to Rav Gamliel and half according to Rabbi Yeshua. And the result is that half of the Mishnah is not according to the final halacha. However, So according to Rashi, everything that we're talking about over here is according to Rav Gamliel. But there are Mefarshim who say that actually Rava is not necessarily saying that. What he's saying could work according to Rabbi Yeshua as well, because Rabbi Yeshua would say we don't believe her only when the husband is claiming a tainas bari, whereas over here he's claiming only Shema. He's saying maybe this mumim existed before the Erusin. Okay, so so therefore, so 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 uh, So therefore, if the husband has been able to bring proof only that the woman existed while she was in her father's house, yes, we would say kan nimsa kan hoya. However, against that, we have the various chazakas that we talked about. She does have a chazkas aguf. She also has the chazaka of Eidanim Shoyes Bekois, and therefore that's reason enough for us to say that fine, let's limit it to only that the mum existed after the Erosin, unless we can bring proof that it existed before the Erosin, then he doesn't have a claim. But the Gemara continues, Ad Shalitis Aris, on the other hand, in that case, even though it's after the marriage, if he finds Eidim that in fact, the mumim existed before the erusin. Well, then, then you don't have the cheskas aguf anymore because against it you have edim that the mum existed before the erusin. So at that point, she only has one chazaka helping her out, namely that he wouldn't have married her unless he checked out and found that there were no mumim, and therefore, if he found mumim, we have to say that he must have accepted them. Adraba, but against that, we have chazaka in an amifais for mumim, bahamin mumim achaskase. Against that, you have the equally valid chazaka that a man's not going to be appeased, is not going to be accepted, is not going to be accepting of mumim, and therefore, the result is that we leave the money in its chazaka. When we don't have the chazaka de gufa and the chazaka of einan amshoyis amakoris, that's reason enough for her claim to be accepted, and therefore she gets her ksuba. But if not, if we don't have the cheskas aguf, only the one chazaka, then it gets canceled out by an equally valid chazaka. So that would be why we would say that once in the sefer, when the mum was discovered when she's living with her husband, that why we would say if the husband brings proof that it existed before the erusin, why would we say that we accept that and say that therefore it was a mekach tos, because she has against that only one chazaka, the other chazaka having been canceled out by Edim, and that chazaka itself, that one chazaka that she might bring to bear, is canceled out by an equally valid chazaka. So that would be why. But in other words, the point is, Rava would say, other than that, we would have said kan nimsa kan hoya, we would have said that once proof is brought. So therefore, when we don't have that consideration, when he only has proof that the mumim existed sometime after the erusin, and he doesn't have any proof whether they existed before it, we still can't say kan nimsa kan hoya and say that it goes all the way back to before the erusin, because we have two chazakas opposing that. So all that is one answer. Rav Ashi gives a different answer. Again, Rashi says Rav Ashi wants to make the whole Mishnah work like Rav Gamliel. And one way of understanding Rav Gamliel's opinion in the beginning of our Masechta is that she has a cheskas aguf. The Gemara actually discussed there a couple of possible reasons why Rav Gamliel and Rav Yeshua argue. Is it on the grounds of cheskas aguf? Is it on the grounds of migri? Anyway, Rav Ashi is assuming, says Rashi, that Rav Gamliel, the reason why he believes her in the various cases where it turns out that she's not a basula is because of cheskas aguf. So then over here, then why in our Mishnah in the reisha of the Mishnah, why does cheskas aguf not work? Why are we saying that the father has to bring proof that it was after the erusin? On the contrary, cheskas aguf should allow us to say that it developed only after the erusin, not before it. The reason is reisha mona la'aba b'yodcha. Because in the Reisha, we're talking about, she's not claiming that she herself should get the money. She's saying that my father should get the money. Because we're talking about, she's still a katana or a naira. She's not yet a begeris. So the money of her ksuba, if she gets divorced at this point, is going to go to her father. Once she gets married, then her ksuba, even if she's young, then her ksuba is going to go to herself, because she's already out of her father's reshus. But when she's a katana or a naira, and she gets an erusin only has taken place, if the erusin is broken, she's back in the, whether we say that the erusin didn't exist in the first place, or whether we say they did, and she gets a get, and she collects a ksuba, all of that goes to the father. So therefore, so now her cheskas aguf doesn't help her father's claim, because they're two different people. On the other hand, the sefer, money li biyodcha. On the other hand, in the sefer, the claim is she's saying that you owe me a mana. So therefore, in the sefer, her cheskas aguf can help her out, whereas in the reisha it can't. There are rishonim who learn that Rav Ashi is in fact arguing with the whole premise of kan nimtza kan hoya. The whole premise that we said before, that we assume that wherever the mum was found, if other things being equal, we would say is the same reshus where it actually happened, which was Rava's point. So there are Mefarshim who learn that Rav Ashi is in fact arguing with that point and saying that here we have, it's not, we don't ever say kan nimtza kan hoya, and the only reason for the distinction between the Reisha and the Sefer is this other matter of who's claiming the money. On the other hand, other Mefarshim learn that Rav Ashi does agree with that, and he's saying that again. We would say that, except for the fact we would say kan nimtza kan hoya, except for the fact that we have that the cheskas aguf doesn't help in the first part of the Mishnah because she's not claiming for herself, but rather she's claiming for her father. So the Gemara says, "Eisvei Rav Acha Breider of Ivya L'Rav Ashi." So Rav Acha Breider of Ivya asked Rav Ashi, "So you're telling me that when she's saying mona la'aba b'yodcha, that you owe my father a mona, then the cheskas aguf doesn't help?" But Brisa says, "Moider a mayor." You, Rav Ashi, are saying that in the Sefer, because she's claiming the money, because she's claiming the ksuba money for herself, therefore we say that her cheskas aguf helps her. But we learn in a Brisa, "Moider a mayor, b'momen aruyin lava imim ve'savia." Rav Meir would agree when it comes to mumim that are the type that would have come with her from her father's house. In other words, mumim that we have a strong reason to assume that, so it sounds like it means mumim that we have a strong reason to assume were already there from her father's house. Then Reb Meir says, "I agree that the father has to bring proof that," so in other words, even though the mumim were discovered only after the chuppah, nevertheless, Reb Meir is saying, if they're mumim that are roi to come from her father's house, namely, we're assuming that means mumim that may well have come into existence while she was living at home, then shala abba habiraya, then the father would have to bring a proof, even though she's in the reshus of the husband. Now, in the case where she's in the reshus of the husband, it's always monali biyodcha. She's always saying that if you divorce me, then you have to pay me the ksuba, not my father, because it's already after the nisuin. And yet we're saying that there's a case where we're saying that the father would have to bring a proof. According to you, Rav Ashi, why? She has cheskas aguf. By the way, Tosfos mentions over here a couple of Rashi mentions that the words murdered a mayor is according to his girsa. Tosfos discusses a few possibilities. I mean, usually it seems like the chachamim are the ones who are strengthening her case. It sounds like over here rather that it sounds from the Mishnah that the mayor is the one who says that the husband has the stronger case, because after all the mayor said even mumim that could have been found out ahead of time, he could still claim that I didn't know of them and that they existed before the erusin. So then Tosfos brings a girsa from Rabbeinu Hananel the other way around, modim chachamim but a mayor, but then Tosfos has a problem with that girsa as well. So whatever girsa you do over here, that Tosfos says you seem to have a bit of a problem with. Anyway, so Acha Breider of Ivya is pointing out that the mayor himself says in a braisa that if it's mumim haru'uyim lover imam and besavia, mumim that we're assuming ru'uyim lover imam means that it's very likely that they came from the father's house, that they already existed while she was living at home. And then we would have to assume that they may have existed even before the erusin, and therefore that's a mekach toros, and the father has to bring a proof to the contrary. So why, according to the logic of money li biyodcha, according to Rav Ashi's logic, you should say once she's in her husband's house, then her cheskas aguf should make it possible for her to collect even without such proof. The answer is hochad ma'askin and biyaseres. The answer is Rav Ashi is going to answer that the braisa is not talking about something that could have happened at some point or other. We're talking about an extra finger where obviously she was born with it. So there's no question, there's no cheskas aguf at all. And it obviously can't have developed after the erusin. Well, the question is, you said it's my rai maisi. Then in that case, what kind of proof does the father have to bring? He can't bring any proof because she was born with it. And the answer is Raya, Duravni Fayasu. You're right. What we mean is the kind of proof would be the proof that the husband previously saw this extra finger and was willing to accept it. The father would have to bring Adim that at some point the husband saw it and accepted it. But you're right, obviously, in that case, the father can't be bringing proof that came into existence only after the Erisin. Okay. So now talking further about this matter of Kan Nimtza Kan Haya and Chazakas of and Chazakas, which we're going to use our Mishnah as proof to it. So Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Hamachlif Para B'chamer, if two people are trading, one has a cow, one has a donkey, and they trade one for the other. There's places in Chassidus where it talks about the deeper meaning behind this din of Hamachlif Para B'chamer, that it means, in other words, that so to speak, a person is trading in his avoida for a higher level of avoida. Anyway, Umashach Bala Chamer Sapara. So now the one who formerly owned the chamur has now done meshicha on the cow, where the rule is with Kinyan Khalifin that once you were koina, that once one side was koina his object, then the other one automatically is koina his. Avlahispik bala par limshachas a chamur ad shemesa chamur. The owner of the cow did not have the chance to do meshicha on the donkey before the donkey died. Now the question becomes. Rashi explains that the donkey was back in its owner's house. Now, that wouldn't matter. If the donkey was still alive, then fine. The Kinyan Chalifin would still take place. As soon as Reuven does Meshicha on the cow, then immediately Shimon would acquire the donkey, even though it's still physically located in Reuven's house. However, in this case, we come to Reuven's house and we find the donkey dead. So now, Reuven, who was the original owner of the donkey, wants to say, I'm sorry, it happened only after I did Meshicha on your cow. Therefore, tough luck. It's your tough luck. And the Meshicha is still, my Meshicha was still valid and I keep the cow. And Shimon says, no, it may have happened before you ever did the Meshicha. And then it was dead at the time. And it was a Mekach Tos. So so Rabbi Yehuda says, Al Bala Chamer, Lo Habiraya, Shari Chamer Rekayim B'Shas Meshicha Spara. The owner of the donkey is going to have to bring proof that the donkey was still alive at the time when the Meshicha was done. The Tana Tuna Kala, and says Rabbi Yehuda, the Tana of our Mishnah, who taught about the case of a Kala, supports what I just said. So now we have to figure out, hey, there is, by the way, in this regard, there is a basic machlokas rishonim on the question of when we say that it happens in one rishus or the other, which is what the Gemara is going to talk about over here. The question would be, what is considered the rishus? What when we say this, we said before the logic kan nimsa kan hoya. What does it mean? Are we talking about the rishus as in the physical as in the physical location of the donkey? Or are we talking about the halachic rishus as in once the meshicha was done, then by assumption the chamor is in the rishus of the other guy of Shimon. So the Rif in fact says the Rif and most rishonim say that we go according to the actual physical rishus. We go according to the actual physical rishus. It's in Reuven's rishus. Therefore, Kan Nimtza Kan Haya tells us that we have to look at that rishus in terms of determining who is the muchzik versus who has to bring the proof. That's the Rif Shita and a number of other Rishonim say. On the other hand, the Rosh very strongly disagrees with that and says that no, once Reuven did Meshicha on the Para, then we assume, then we go according to Halachic Rishus. We assume at this point the Chamor is in his Rishus, and he'd be the one who has to bring the proof that it was alive at the time of the transaction. Anyway, so now the Gemara is telling us the Tana Tuna Kala that. Or the Tana of our Mishnah said something about Kala that bears out what Rabbi Yehuda is saying. So the Gemara says, hey Kala, which case of a Kala in our Mishnah bears on that? Ilema Kala Bevesavya, do we mean the first case of the Mishnah, where she's still living at home, where we're saying the father is the one who has to bring the proof that the mum came into existence only after the Erusin, or as we just said, in the case of an extra finger, he'd have to bring proof that the Chosin was willing to accept it. The Gemara says, "Me dummy, how can you compare it? Hosam maisi av rayo mapik. In that case, if the father brings such a proof, then he'll be able to take away money from the chosin. Hocham maisi balachamer rayo moikin. Here, the balachamer already has the para in his possession because he already did meshicha on it, and all he needs is a proof in order to keep that cow that he already did meshicha on. So it's not the same thing." because after all, he has a cheskas mamon, as opposed to in the case of our Mishnah, the husband, the father does not have a cheskas mamon. So Amar Rabba kalav beis chamia. So Rabba Abba says, what Rabbi Yehuda means is the proof comes from the sefer of the Mishnah, where she's already living in her father-in-law's house, meaning with her husband, and was saying the husband's the one who has to bring the proof that the mum existed before the erusin. And again, we said that the whole Mishnah, we're saying the whole Mishnah goes according to Rabbi Gamliel. So even when Nimtzu Beis Aviyah, the husband is the one who has to bring the proof in order to break her ability to collect her ksuvah. So before we said there may be cases when he doesn't have to. We said the first part of the Mishnah had said the father has to bring a proof. So we said that's because that's where we're talking about where we don't have the, on the one hand we have the chazaka of Einanim Shoyse B'Kois, and against it we have the chazaka that he wouldn't accept mumin, but we have proof that he actually has proof that the mumin existed before the erusin, so then he's able to claim nekach toros. So anyway, sort of Abba is saying the proof is from that part of the Mishnah. Now we're not talking about the husband is not trying to take away money from the kala. He's just trying to keep the money that he has, and still he has to bring proof. The same way over here, the bala para, the one who formerly owned the chamer and now did meshicha on the para, we're saying is going to have to bring proof that the chamer was still alive at the time of the transaction. So the Gemara says, "Va'katil adomi." It's still not quite the same thing. Over there, the husband is bringing a proof. He's bringing edim that the mumim existed before the erusin, and the result of that is that he ruins the father's chazaka. The father had a cheskas aguf on his daughter, and now the husband's edim ruin that chazaka. On the other hand, over here, the Bala Chamer brings proof. He brings Edim that the Chamer was still alive at the time of the transaction. And what he's doing is preserving his existing Chazaka. The donkey also had a Cheskas Aguf. There was a Chazaka that at one point it was alive, and we should assume that it was alive as long as possible. So it's still not exactly the same thing. So what are you telling me that the case of our Mishnah is a proof for this? So the answer is Amr of Nachman Yitzchak Kala Beis Aviyah. After all, we are learning from the first case of the Mishnah about Kala living in her father's house, where we're saying the father has to bring a proof, even though he has cheskas aguf. You were asking before that the difference is that there, if the father brings proof, he can take away money, and in the case of the Parah and the Chamor, we're just talking about keeping what he already has. No, because we're not talking about the Kiddushin per se, but we're not talking about the Ksuba, we're talking about Ula Kiddushin. We're talking about that as far as keeping the actual money of Kiddushin. So we're going to say, Rav Nachman Yitzchak says, we're going to have to, after all, say that, according to Rav Yehuda, that, in fact, he's disagreeing with everything we said before about the Mishnah being all according to Rav Gamliel. We are going to have to say that, according to him, part of the Mishnah is according to Rav Yeshua and part according to Rav Gamliel. And Rav Yeshua would say, therefore, that the father is always going to have to bring a proof, because what we're talking about is to bring a proof in order to keep the money of the Kiddushin that the Chosin gave. So don't think that this whole discussion is only according to the opinion that kiddushin are not given to be kept. Meaning, let's say a regular case of kiddushin, and then the husband died before the nisuin. Does the kiddushin money have to be returned? One way of looking at it is that lav letibuin nitnu, they're not given to be lost forever. In other words, so therefore it has to be reimbursed. So therefore, the kiddushin money the chassan gave the kala is going to have to be reimbursed to the chassan's heirs. So that's a machlokas Rashi says in Bava Basra. So don't think we're saying, says Rav Abba, that only according to that opinion are we arguing over here. Ela afilu mando am kiddushin l'tibuin nitnu. Even if we say that once kiddushin are given, it's irrevocable, and the kiddushin money itself does not have to be given back. Hanimil kiddushin vaday. That's when it was when the kiddushin themselves were vaday, and just the chosin died afterwards. Have a kiddush toast, but when it comes to, in our case, the whole kiddushin were based on a mistaken premise, because he thought that she doesn't have mumim, and it turns out that she does. So therefore, e mais yiraya ein, e loy loy. only if the father can bring a proof that the moment existed, or that the moment came into existence after the Erusin, or that the husband was willing to accept them, then he can keep the Kiddushin money. But if not, then not. If not, then not, because this was Kiddushei Toros. So therefore, so again, the discussion is not really about the Ksuba money. The discussion is rather about the Kiddushin money. The Ksuba money, you're right, we would say that in order for him to collect the Ksuba money, he would need a stronger proof than that. Or at least that as far as the Ksuba money, that doesn't bear on Rabbi Yehuda and on Rabbi Yehuda Omar Shmuel's din about the Parah and the Chamor. Okay, so the Gemara says, Meisvi, I have a contradiction to that. So you're telling me then that, so you're telling me in the case of the Parah and the Chamor, and you're telling me in the case of our Mishnah, that if the Suffolk existed in his Rishus, then he's the one who's going to have to bring the proof in order to even keep what he has. But the Mishnah, the Gemara says, Meisvi, I have a contradiction to that. A Braisa says, Machat shenimtzas ba'ovi beis hakosis. If you shecht an animal and you find a needle in the thickness of the beis hakosis, the beis hakosis is one of the four stomachs of an animal. It has a double wall, so you can conceivably have. So now, if a needle were to puncture both surfaces of it, then the animal is trefa, as usual with internal organs that are punctured. But if a mitzad echad, so if the needle is only from one side and only goes through one thickness of the skin over there, ksheira, then the animal is still kosher. Mishnei tzadin terefa, but if it goes straight through from one side to the other, from through both thicknesses, then the animal is terefa. And the braisa continues, nimtzal le'akoret dam, if you find where the needle was, you find a drop of blood, biyadua shu lifnei shchita, then we know that that puncture took place before the shchita, and that the animal is treif, because otherwise, after the animal is shechted, it wouldn't have the ability to bleed over there. And if you don't find a drop of blood of it on there, then you know that it took place after shechita. Now, the point is that then if it was after shechita, of course, the animal is going to be kosher. It's not a problem. And the braisa continues, hugla piyamaka, if you find that there was a needle over there, but you also find that the wound scabbed over, then you know that this injury took place at least 3 days before shchita, and therefore it would mean that now if a person bought that animal and shechted it and discovered this, then it would mean it was a mekach tovs, because it means that already it had this injury, it was trefa more than 3 days ago. But if you don't have, let's say, you have a drop of blood over there, so you know that there was before shchita, and therefore the animal is treif, but you don't have a scab over it, so you don't know how long ago it happened. It may have happened before you bought the animal, it may have happened after you bought it. Then the braisa says, hamotzi mechaveh levaraya. Then whichever one is going to want to collect the money from the other is going to have to bring the proof. Now, the question is, v'i yohiv tabach domi. So now, suppose that the shochet who bought the animal had already paid the money, boili suya rayo mapik, then was saying he's the one who would have to bring the proof that it happened more than that it happened before he bought the animal, and only then could he get his money back. Ba'amai, now why? Based on the logic we said before, baal behema laisi raya v'noikin. Shouldn't we say instead that the original owner of the animal should be the one to bring the proof, and he can keep the money that he has? So in other words, it sounds like when we have a suffix, now we found a reyesin, his animal, we know that it was his animal at one point. So therefore, that's exactly the same as Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel's case of Hamachlef Parah B'Chamor, where the Chamor at one point belonged to him. And the question is, did it still belong to him at the time that it died? And Rabbi Yehuda is saying that the owner of the Chamor has to bring the proof. But here it sounds like the buyer of the animal has to bring the proof. So why? So the Gemara answers, B'dolo Yohiv Tab Chadam. We have to answer that braisa is talking about where he hadn't yet paid for the animal. So then in that case, then he's not bringing a proof. Then we're not saying he has to bring a proof in order to get back his money. We're saying he's bringing a proof in order to keep the money that he already has. But the Gemara says, my sucker. So why should you assume that the braisa is talking about only that one possible case? Why the braisa should be saying more specifically then that it depends whether he paid money or not. Who has to bring the proof? So the Gemara says, you're right. Ela ki osi Rami by Yecheskel, when ki osi Rami by Yecheskel, when Rami by Yecheskel came from Eretz Yisrael, Omar, he says, loy tzai sinu lahani kloli dekayu Yehuda ochi mishmei deshmul. Don't pay attention to these rules in halacha that my brother Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda the Amora, and Rami by Yecheskel are brothers. Their father was Rabbi Yecheskel. Don't pay attention to those rules that he says mishmei deshmul in the name of Shmuel. You should know, says Rami by Yecheskel, hochi amar Shmuel, what Shmuel actually said is not that the Baal HaChamor is always going to be the one who has to bring the proof in the case of the Parah and the Chamor, and then you're wondering, then how does that fit with this case of the Beis HaKosis? But rather, Kol Shenolad Sofik B'Rishusay, whichever one the Sofik came into existence, where it was found in his Rishus, all of Haraya, then he's the one who would have to bring the proof. Again, you have the Machlokas Rishonim, what's considered the Rishus? Do we mean the physical Rishus, or do we mean the Halach Rishus? Anyway, the Tona Tuna Kala, and then we're using the case of Kala in our Mishnah as a proof of that. So therefore, we don't have to say, after all, that the Mishnah is according to two different Tanoim. It can go all according to Rav Gamliel, like Rava explained before. So therefore, so in the Reisha of the Mishnah, the mum was found while she's living at home. Therefore, the father has to bring the proof. Again, Kan Nimtza Kan Hoya. In the Sefer, it was found in the husband's house. Therefore, he's the one who has to bring the proof. Again, Kan Nimtza Kan Hoya. Well, the same thing applies over here. In the case of the Parah and the Chamor, whichever one the Chamor's Rishus is in at the time is going to be that one who has to bring the proof. So now the Gemara says, "Meisvi Machat Shenimtzas Ba'Ovi Beis HaKosis Chola." So what about this case of the needle and the Beis HaKosis? Now, the Eid Deloy Yohiv Tabach Dami. So it was said, well, apparently, what we're saying is that if the butcher who bought the animal had not yet paid money, Baal Behema Boyli Suyer Ayo Mapik, then the owner of the animal would have to bring the proof that this injury, that the needle, the swallowing of the needle, happened only after he sold the animal, and then he can collect the money. Didn't the Suffolk come into existence in the Rishus of the butcher? And the answer is, the Gemara says, do you have tabach dami? In fact, we are talking about over here where he already paid for the animal. Well, the question is, again, like before, my psaka, who says that it has to daft to be that way? The Braisa is phrasing it very generically, so it sounds like it doesn't matter whether he paid yet or not. And the answer is, stama de milsa, because unlike before, when we asked that question, the difference is we can assume the stam, kamad lo yohiv inish zuzi, lo yohiv inish chevasa, before Reuven gives the money, Shimon's not going to give him the animal. So it's more logical, before we were saying that they were talking about he didn't pay for it yet, and we're saying that's an unusual case. But it's more usual that you get the animal only after you paid for it. Therefore, the braisa can say the generic statement that this works when he already paid the money, as is usually the case, and then we would say that in fact that so now he's not, so we're not talking about him bringing a proof in order to collect the money. We're just talking about the butcher in whose rishus the suffolk was discovered, bringing proof in order to be able to get back his money. But otherwise, because it was found in his rishus, therefore the onus is on him to bring the proof. But in fact, if he hadn't paid money yet, then you're right, he might not have to do that because he's already muchzik in the money yet.
When they say beis hakosis, is that also including the other three?
No, so the point is the beis hakosis is the only one. Well, I mean, the concept about them being punctured by a needle applies to almost any internal organ. The reason we're mentioning the beis hakosis specifically is because, unlike the other ones, it has a double wall. So it's possible for only one wall of it to be punctured and the animal to still be kosher. That was the beginning of the braisa. But in terms of, you're right, in terms of the rest of the din, as far as the hamotz mechavel baraya and all of that, the same din would apply to any of the other stomachs as well. If any of them are punctured through and through, then the animal's teref, yes. And you'd have the same consideration, did it happen before, did it happen after? We mentioned before that there are rishonim who learn that the case of the Kala over there, of the Chassan and Kala arguing when the mum took place, may be a case of Bori Veshema, which would be similar to this case over here, because obviously neither of them has an x-ray to know when the animal actually swallowed the needle and when it was punctured. On the other hand, if we say that there's a case of Bori or Bori, then it's not exactly the same, but still it's similar enough that we can bring a proof from our Mishnah. Okay, we said at the end of the mission of a chachamim, we said the chachamim distinguish between mumim that are hidden versus mumim that are revealed, where if they're revealed, then the husband must have known of them in advance. And then even if they're hidden, we said in the Mishnah that if there's a bathhouse in town, then he can ask his mother or his sisters or whatever to check her out ahead of time. So Amar Rav Nachman, v'nichbe k'mumim shebaseser. So Rav Nachman says, you should know that epileptic fits are also considered like a mum shebaseisiv. Now that would apply only if there's a fixed time for them. So every so often on a regular schedule, she gets these fits. So then we can. It's possible that he may not have known of it until they got married. So therefore, it'd be like another like a mum that he may not discover until afterwards. But if it's irregular and at any time she might have these epileptic fits, then it's considered like a mum shebagolui. So if it's kvi'alei's man, so Rashi says, for example, so she knows it's going to happen every so often, so she makes sure at that time to stay in her room and that people shouldn't see her. But if it's irregular, if it can happen at any time, then it's like a mum shebagolui, because then the likelihood is that at least one time it happened while the husband saw it, and then if he went ahead with the marriage, then we have again that the rov and fias, he must have seen the mum and been willing to accept that he can live with that. Okay.